We have to have presence in every level of city government there is. We need to go take a look at and see, you know, what job that ain't been tapped yet. And we need to go in there and mix it up. And that's why I'm running for mayor. I need all of y'all to get out, and brothers and sisters in this community. I need y'all to help me now. Go out there and spread the word. We need to make history. It's been 159 years. You know, I'm on the poor man campaign. Tell your neighbor, let's get out and vote. Let's show these folks that they sitting back, you know, eating their cottage cheese and, you know, and you know, when they wake up, on the third, it's going to be a black man going to be the mayor of Champaign. Thank you very much, and I love y'all.
Amen. That was Brother Cobb for sharing with us on this morning. Thank you for tuning in to WEFT 90.1 FM. You have anything to share?
Nice show, Hazar. And I just want to say hello to my friends and family out there. Have a blessed day.
Amen. 90.1 FM, WEFT, getting ready for our next show.
Down the railroad track, it makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. That lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Pound to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
This is Dave Monkey, Prairie Monk, WEFT, Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial, and Dave will be in right soon. At the Prairie State Conservation Coalition meetings, it's been in action probably 10 or 12 years, and we're well represented from East Central Illinois on the board, as well as in the audience, probably about 180 registrants, 60% women, majority probably over 50, just one black person, and that was an invited guest speaker, so we have to think about that sometimes. Some of the highlights. And I'll go through this just because it helps you to understand what you might have to do if you're working with sort of getting together from two people in the basement to having a regular board with all the legal details. So legislative interests, major legislative interest is a new DNR director. Then there was an annual report. David Holman does a good job with that and sends it around beforehand, so you sort of know what's coming, and it doesn't take a lot of time. There's a high gap where the PSCC is trying to get videos for walkthrough events so that people can get an idea of a natural area at a different time of the year, or just augment the their walkthrough. Stewardship program that Fran Harty has been promoting. He's a leader in this Prairie State Conservation Coalition effort. He's and the stewardship program will allow people who are trusts with 501c3s to, that's a tax exemption, to work with stewardship of vital natural areas. Women in Conservation was quite impressive. It was two people speaking to the history of women's involvement. It runs through a lot of informality, but with starting with the native population, the shamans there were walking dictionaries of nature, but the tradition was verbal. There's no written documentation, so it transferred from one generation to another generation. And it was often the female responsibility to do that work. So that was lost a lot because of the lack of documentation. Yeah. Then gradually women got to be doing things, but their clothing was defined. They had dresses in situations where dresses weren't really useful. So some of the early conservation women denied some of the norms. They usually did a lot of the discovery work, the innovation, but usually the leadership was male. In some cases, it was female. And it goes through from people in the turn of the century and beginning to be concerned about the loss of habitat and the loss of endangered species on very specific places, to people like Rachel Carson, who said a lot about herbicides and pesticides and chemicals, and alerted the world to the involvement of the chemical industry. But there were others who spoke well and did innovative things. So I found that rather interesting session. There was another one which dealt with herbicide in particular, dicamba, is a current concern. It is spreading into adjacent natural areas, and especially with oaks, as in southern Illinois. There's a cupping of the leaves. Had good visuals. A biologist with charts and graphs to show what has been happening and what might happen. The dicamba situation is rather worrying, up to and including what humans ingest. So I found his program very helpful. There are others designing resiliency. If you have a lot of natural areas and they're disjunct, then you have to do things like burning. You have to be adjacent to farmland. In situations where burning is not necessarily understood, but very essential. So you try to put some of your energy in places where there's a coalition of space so that you can burn without necessarily treading on the toes of people who are adjacent. There's an educational process here. There's an interesting reminder that we need to organize research. It might be very simple to start with, just a photograph. You might be working with volunteers who are not necessarily well informed about species, might not even know what this plant is, but there might even be an invasive species. But he was suggesting that we should take note and record and work with people like the Natural History Survey to document your natural area. So it's not just that this is a good and interesting site. It's a good and interesting site, but it has perhaps endangered species. But they should be documented. And I thought that was good. Designing projects for sustainability. How do you take on a natural area and you have saved it? The ring counties around Chicago have all voted to gather up natural areas while they exist rather than preparing their existing material. So there's always this debate about maintenance of what you have and acquiring what you might never have again. This is especially the case if railroad rights of way are going out of action. They need to be acquired at the time when they're abandoned, so you don't have too much choice. So figuring out how those sites gets to be sustainable for many years. We have railroad beds that are 30 years old, and we still haven't found the money to maintain them. So this is volunteer effort, often heavy volunteer effort. And so this sustainability needs to be assessed. So there's a certain amount of money to go around to do these things. And so we need a needs assessment. You need to look at what you have, what the state has, what the nation has, and figure out the priorities of where you might sit and where you might work with the finance that you get. There is farmland conversion. Sometimes, especially in southern Illinois, where the glaciation was not the same as in the north. The Wisconsin glaciation was very, very fertile and is used extensively for farming. In southern Illinois, the Illinois glaciation was not as stringent, not as rich. And so some farmland can go back, and there is money for that. There's even some money in the farm bill that's coming through right now. And there are people like Emily Brory who worked with the Open Lands Project, who is a specialist in handling financial for this sort of thing. Then there is collaboration. Brooke McDonald, who has been previous president of the Prairie State Conservation Coalition, was first and foremost to ask how many of you have associated yourself with your local politicians or state politicians or national politicians. Hand up. And it, in a case like this, it's a fair array of hands. But he wanted to stress that what happens at the local level is rather important. If you look at the field of politicians, often the person who is on a county committee, maybe then on a county board, may then be a state rep. Foster collaborations. It's interesting that an association with realtors is important. And Deanna Glosser was talking to the fact that she'd been going to talk to realtors. Rather a silent response, but then a reaction that was kind of interesting. They really, really want to help. If you're going to have a big ice hockey rink here and development, then part of the thing that attracts people to that sort of potential convention venue is going to come here because they want to know what your ecosystem is. I came from Australia many years ago with that in mind, and I found it very hard to find anything left of the local ecosystem. So realtors know that people, especially the younger generations, are asking to see what you have and for your situation. Then there was a heartfelt presentation about the aesthetics and the excitement of the natural areas. We have in this bundle of 150 people who are very knowledgeable about all the details that go with preserving nature. And now at the other end, we have people who are coming in who may not know as much. So people who have had long experience can put together some ideas that let people know what they can do and why it is important to do it. I'll say a little bit more about this later, but those sort of presentations, like those of Jefferson Post, require a certain feeling for sound expression and for the visual expression, and the building that we're in at Starved Rock State Park is big and challenging. So it has a air conditioning that is very loud and invasive. It has a sound problem which is associated with equipment. It's associated with age. Many of the participants are over 50, and even though they may not have hearing loss, automatically you're losing some of your hearing capacity. So we'll talk about that later. Then there is networking, a banquet where you sit and work with people. You talk to people and find out what they're doing. You gather up excitement and realize what other people are doing. And little pieces of information come out. One of them is that a little piece of railroad bed near to Paxton, which is very rich in prairie, has been rented by the Grand Prairie Friends. But it is a problem because if you're adjacent to the railroad line, you become one of perhaps 30 different customers that can, or associates, that can be blanket sued if something happens on the railroad. It's a usual technique. If a rail car derails, then immediately everyone nearby is sued, and then they keep dropping off the people that don't relate. But that process requires expensive insurance, and that insurance goes up. We're interested in that corridor because the rest of it has 10 miles of trail potential with prairie on either side. And so the challenge there is that to rent adjacent to a main line, and then you're going to face relatively small rental costs, but huge insurance costs. The problem of wide trails comes up, and we also learned that the land foundation that we've been talking to about the acquisition of 4 miles of low-grade prairie, but it's the only that we have, was the answer that we got from the foundation was that they would like to put a trail through it, but we're very cautious about doing that because the trail in the Abana to St. Joe area is so wide that it has taken out historic remnant prairie and left us with next to nothing except that perhaps the roadside planting, which we strongly suspect has been aided and abetted with sweet clover, which is regarded as a natural fertilizer, but it the natural fertilizer plant is sweet clover, and it becomes a very invasive weed. So you talk around, and those sorts of topics come up, and it's very helpful to know what's going on. There are people who talk about toolboxes, and we just talked about insurance some, but that's of major concern, and you need to know your insurance companies. You need to know people who know the rules. It's a little bit like taxation. You You need to know how your natural area is taxed. And then there was another toolbox is membership. How do you go about getting membership? This is something that happens with a very small membership, or does it have a national kickstart-type membership? Then there are program details, and some of the members are very astute at being able to handle natural areas that might be owned by sometimes three, four, five different agencies overlapping, and how do you work with that is another question. There is a matter of easements, whether you have a long-term easement, and what are the associations. Then we had to talk about saving the oaks. This relates back to the herbicide situation, where by happenstance, natural areas adjacent to farmland are losing to glyphosates and to dicamba, and so there's a need for biologists to document this occurrence and think about how we go about saving oaks and which oaks are more susceptible, and so there's a lot of questions there. Then we had someone talking about city wildlife, and mainly it's oriented pollination and oriented to monarch butterflies. Monarchs aren't the only butterflies that are losing out. The bees are losing out too, and that doesn't mean the Italian introduced bee, which we use for honey. It means that the best pollinators are bumblebees, and how do we go about preserving plots of land? So this organization is going around Chicago looking for little plots that can be converted to nature. Sometimes that's a heavily mown area that is allowed to go back to nature. But there's always a challenge from people who have grown since 1945 when the universe seemed to invent a rotary mower. Many of these little odd spots that weren't mown and roadsides have now become mown, and it's almost set up a sociological statement that if you don't mow, you don't have sociological status, and cemeteries that haven't been mown suddenly get mown, even though the only people buried there are people who came in a covered wagon and don't have local representatives. But they may be interested in having some of the natural vegetation that's grown there preserved. The Land Trust Alliance is a national, and some of these groups are international, and they have been heavily involved in accreditation. IRS especially is worried about agencies, mostly large agencies, that buy up natural areas, then they claim them as their rough, tough territories, and they claim them as natural areas and take a huge tax break. And so accreditation means that the people who are legitimate are recognized. It's a sort of statement that takes 500 hours to put together and a lot of work. So the national people were talking about that, and easements and IRS and what are some of the local changes. So financial research. need. Somehow you need to know what money is coming in and what money is going out. And often volunteers are involved. We don't always have a lot of expertise. These may be retirees from very different fields. So how do you do a little research with perhaps the aid of a CPA to look at the budget and where you're expending and to try different things, but don't be afraid to say, this one doesn't work. Let's try it a different way. And so there were speeches to that effect, followed by legal updates. The recent administration has changed a lot of laws, and how do they change? And this almost requires a CEO as chief executive officer that is knowledgeable, that has degrees in this area. And it's amazing to me how sophisticated some of this sort of stuff is, and well beyond us at a local level. There was a wrap-up, and usually the wrap-up there asks people who have done interesting things or been associated with interesting events are asked to present. And so there was two or three of these. One of them was from George Davies County, where had an area that was partially involved with the Department of Natural Resources, and the public wanted to put trails through it, but they had to be cautious trails. But it took 6 years to back and forth, and still it wasn't sorted out. Then a new director came in and gave them carte blanche to do what they wanted to do, and that was amazing, and that is now in action. So that's a nice report. Then there was a teacher who's been working with fourth graders and finding it very exciting to bring natural history into the classroom and take the classroom out. And that was an inspiration. I had been reading a book for children. It's called Snuggle Pot and Snuggle Pie. And this book is an Australian classic. And it is like Wind in the Willows. All sorts of animals, kangaroos and lizards and Banksia people. And, these are Australian situations with gumnup children being a key. So May Gibbs has drawn up this book and written the story. And I look at it because I have a nephew who's coming here shortly, and she has a niece, rather, and she has a 4-year-old. And I look at this book as a from a different era. You're going to have the lizard smoking a pipe, and that's sort of come to an end. I don't think I saw any, I certainly didn't see anyone with a cigarette at the meeting I was at. The Monticello Republican newspaper came in with a ban on vaping. They're just not wanting that for their younger population, especially school children. So you have to look at what was in the past, and the Banksia man, for instance, is given the evil eye. He's the evil part of this. And snakes are treated. So you have to look to see how various species are treated in a Victorian era or in a different setting. The English have a volume of poetry which is called Mother Goose. And you have to know that in that era, when you weren't able to say things directly in politics, you could say it through children's poetry. So Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after. It's a tremendously political statement. So you have to then vet some of these stories for their indirect involvement. It's in this case, I was looking for the U.S. counterpart for Snuggle Pot and Snuggle Pie. And it's so it's I haven't found it yet, but I went to the Urbana Free Library, and they advised me to go to the University Library, Children's Division, more historic, whereas they handle more recent children literature. But I also went to the mall where there was I should say that after the wrap-up with the people that were doing things at Joe Davies and the teacher, there was a board meeting that people could attend. But I found some, before I get onto the Lincoln Square thing and Snuggle Pot and Snuggle Pie, I would say there were some challenges. And this meeting is held at Starved Rock, so people in Southern Illinois can get there, and people from the Wisconsin border can get down to it. It's near the Route 80. It's an interesting place to be at. So it's interesting and central. But the big hall that we use is has terrible acoustics. And it's partly due to a loud air conditioner that you have to compete with. And sound equipment that seems to be a little on the old side. And the lack of human experience. There are some people who are well attuned to speaking, and they know to eat their microphone. And also there's an aging process. Most of these people were a lot of them were over 50. So they, even though they don't realize it, they're losing a little of their hearing. The sine curves that go with sound theory is that you knock the tops and the bottoms off the sound curves, and that means that people's brains have to do a little adjusting to filling in the words and the sentences. And that takes them away from listening to the speaker, where you also have a lot of information in a short time, and you have to process that. So it pays to have a very good sound system. And in this case, I found it difficult. We have to tolerate the air conditioning, but I had some comments and suggestions, and I will perhaps say some of them to you just so you might be organizing your own interest group and your own natural area or non-natural area. The first thing is, and I find it exemplified in municipal meetings, with council meetings and the like, the microphone that is for the council speakers and the public presenters is on a flexible connection, and the speaker is asked to draw the microphone to their height. So someone who has a stature of 6'4" is going to need the mic at a different level than someone who is 5'2". And often at city meetings, that is to the point that the presenter, council person or not, is asked to please draw the microphone to their face, and indeed almost eat the microphone. So if you have people who are not used to doing that sort of thing, you have to be bold enough and kind enough to intercept and say, put your talk into the microphone at your level. So I wrote myself, when I came back, I wrote myself a little treatise suggesting that, one, a general microphone, and you stand 2 feet away from it, you're not going to be heard. And so there are things you can do. One is you can ask your speaker to be aware of the limitations and to please hold the mic if necessary. The mic is often on a stand, and it can be released from that stand, but often people leave it on the stand. So you ask that that mic be picked up, and as you move, it's helpful. Movement, roving mics are also a help. If you go to Ebert Fest, no question is presented until the questioner has a roving mic in hand. Sometimes there's a temptation, if you don't have a roving mic, to get the speaker to repeat the question. But if it's a long involved question, the public misses what the questioner has to say. So roving mics are a good deal. If you have chairs rather than tables, so that the chairs are a wide apart, or the rows are wide apart enough for people to get out, you can put a standard mic in the aisle and expect people to come to it. But that is a kind of a disruptive in a way if people have to get out. Roving mics come in various qualities, and some of them break down, so you have to have a backup group. It helps to have a mixing board and a technician like David does here with me. He's constantly telling me to speak into the microphone. And we do have people like Mike Feldman who know how to adjust the microphone so that you don't hear my breathing. So there are adjustments. So there's various sophistications in those mics. There's also the speaker location. If you put the speaker, they had a tall speaker, and practically every visual was violated by this black stand. So speakers to the side, that is helpful. There's also speaker movement. If some people gesticulate when they get excited, they look to the graphic on the screen rather than on their computer, and that takes them away from the standard mic that's set on the table or the podium. So to overcome that, you have a lavalier that you can put on a buttonhole, and it's on your chest. A little better than that is to have a lavalier that moves with your head, so it's over your head. If you have a technician, then the technician usually has earphones that allow the technician to realize that the sound is not going out. And that technician can actually indicate to the speaker to be closer or what have you. My suggestion is that recognizing the limitations of the situation, that you should, I would suggest to rent a sound company for the 2 days. That sound company would bring a mixing board, and that mixing board can be adjusted. So one of the more wonderful speakers had a very soft voice, and that can be adjusted by a technician. Doesn't have to be an expert, but it is helpful. It's probably costly to bring that sort of van to the meeting, but when you have about 150 people in a room and you have them spread out because there's tables to each row, then you tend to lose a little of the sound, and you can tell by the people in front of you that they're asking, did you hear that? So it's a good indication that it might be valuable to put together a sound operation using the fairly limited system that is there. It's also a reminder that, as we do here, such a technician can also operate a camera if you want to do that. And you can have a landline that connects to the board so that the sound is better. And then there's multiplier effect. If Prairie State Conservation Coalition was to do this and demonstrate that it's effective, then DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, might consider upgrading their facility. But there are a lot of little things that we can do, like talking to the speakers, letting them know early on that they will be speaking in limited situation. Could you please be close to the microphone? The positioning of sound speakers and the like. You also have to realize that this meeting is put together by very genuine people, and they have done a lot to improve the likes of computer presentations, which used to be you sometimes had to wait a while until the computer got into action. So we have to say thank you to those people who do that sort of work and have those sorts of skills. I came back via the back roads. I'm an inveterate back road wanderer. I came down through Lexington, and I stopped off there and took some photographs of old buildings, old elevators, and we'll deal with that in another program. When I got back, there was a meeting of reading across America at the Lincoln Square Mall. At this time, across the nation, people are invited to set up booths. There are people who convene this in park districts, forest preserves, rotary clubs, and the like. There are people who fund this, at every entrance there are people who have bags, and the child that comes to this meeting once a year, this is the 19th event, and they get a bag. And when they go through a certain number of tasks, then they get to pick a book. Mm. And somebody has had to fund the book. And so there's a local involvement, but it's a national effort, and I just watched with intrigue how many young folk came, mostly with their parents, who would shepherd them through going to different events like storytelling or drawing or just a whole bunch of little events that were set up by various agencies in the community, and especially those agencies that are working with children. I approached some of the leaders because Lincoln Challenge was involved. Lincoln Challenge is at Rantoul, and it's been applauded for taking wayward youth, male and female, into a program where it's a little formal, but it's also been quite successful in changing the lifestyle of some of these young folk. So they were there dressed in blue, and they said to the leader, "Do you have someone from Rantoul who is in charge that I could talk to? Because we have 9 acres of prairie just north of Rantoul, and I think it could be a helpful site for people to draw, to people to help us pick seed, to get rid of invasive species." And so I was referred to Jamie Easter, and that was interesting, because right next to our 9 acres there is a plot, probably about 8 acres of farmland that's not being used for farming, that we've looked on fondly to perhaps buy. The aim would be to take interested tourists off Kank F 57, Highway 57 at Kankakee, to give them an experience of looking at sand dunes where loess was blown across the country, where as the glacial meltways dried. So there are sand dunes in that area. So then I would take them down old Route 45, which parallels the 57, Highway to Loda, where there's excellent cemetery prairie and railroad right-of-way prairie, to Paxton, which also has a viable old cemetery that fortunately has been burned intermittently, and allowed to express itself. And then to drive 10 miles down the road to the Pope Prairie, just north of Rantoul, where there's a possibility for a bicycle trail, but also intermittent remnant prairie all the way along. And there's the width of a main line, an interurban, an old Route 45, and a dual highway, which didn't get built because 57 was put in. So the second leg of the dual highway has been planted to ash. And the prairie that's underneath is now growing because the ash trees are dying with emerald ash borer. And so I found Jamie, and lo and behold, her father owns the plot of land that we're interested in. Mm. And so this is an extension of the inspiration from a teacher speaking at the Prairie State Conservation Coalition. And so I take my... I try to imagine here if we could perhaps rent the area, if we can't afford to buy it. I've often thought of a kickstart program. And it would be the pragmatic end of our prairie. The remnant we have, I hesitate to have people doing tourist work on it, but we could have a planted prairie on this 8 acres. So we're talking. And so... being inspired, I came back and got my Australian book that I've been checking out, Snuggle Pot and Snuggle Pie. And I found librarians at the meeting, and they advised me to go over to the Urbana Free Library. So I paddled over to the Urbana Free Library, and they said, well, they mostly deal with... I was looking for the counterpart, the U.S. counterpart there. To the Australian one that I was reading. They mainly deal with up-to-date child literature. So, and they've also referred me to the university. So the inspiration that comes from the meetings is real and exciting, and I was very pleased to be there, and we'll probably be there next year. There are a lot of repeat people, so you get to meet friends and relatives that you see about once a year and exchange ideas. So I think it's time that we were finished. So this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board, and I wasn't here at the very beginning of the show, so I'll do my usual introduction. This is the Prairie Monk program, and today's date is Sunday, March the 3rd, 2019. And with that, we're going to wrap up this program. The views and opinions expressed are solely those of the speakers and no one else. We don't have the theme song from Shruti today. It's all pre-recorded, and so we're going to go directly from our usual closing theme song from Joel Mabus into the first song that the gentleman picked for Shruti Music of India here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. We are community radio for East Central Illinois.
Re na ra. this was an attempt of mine in singing Raag Bhairav. Many of y'all might be having this doubt. What exactly